It's time to change the situation if Tottenham wants to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. Then we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we play the Tottenham way.
And still Ricky Villa! What a fantastic run! He scored!
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh!
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Tottenham Way podcast. And we've been so jolly and full of optimism of late. As regular listeners will know, Dan Kilpatrick lives in the land of optimism. But alas, our joy was dashed again at the hands of Arsenal on Wednesday night. I'm Marcus Buckland, Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard, Tom Allnutt of The Times, and Tom Barkley of The Sun are all here to try and make sense of the latest disappointment and work out what is coming next. Obviously, a trip to Everton. I think it's a possibility that Spurs could be as low as 15th come the end of the weekend. Are they heading towards a genuine relegation battle? Lots to sink our teeth into. Dan, first of all, Wednesday night, Arsenal. We did say beforehand that a defeat in itself would not necessarily be a huge setback, but the manner of that performance, the first half an hour in particular, was that even worse than you'd envisaged in your sort of worst nightmares?
Hi, Marcus. Well, as you know, I don't have worst nightmares. I live in the land of optimism, so I was only seeing sunny outcomes for Spurs in the game. Yeah, Postecoglou called it passive afterwards, and I did think that was the right word. All three of us, myself and the two Toms, were in the press room afterwards, and I think it was Allnutt said to me that was a game played on Arsenal's terms, and I thought that was a good way of putting it. Almost every phase of the game kind of went, I think, as Arsenal would have planned it. I mean, they would have really wanted to put Spurs under a load of pressure quickly, get a lot of corners and free kicks and crosses into the box, put Kinski under pressure, test him out, and that's exactly what happened. They would have wanted the second half to be a bit more open and try and get the third goal. That's how it played out. They slowed the game down in the second half when they wanted to slow it down. And then they kind of defended stoutly for the last 10 minutes without Spurs ever really looking like scoring, which was the way it went in September as well when Spurs were chasing the game from a goal down. So I thought Arsenal really managed the game well. And yeah, as Tom said last night, played it on their terms. It was very frustrating though, because I thought Spurs actually weathered the early storm pretty well, and Kinski was assertive and they repelled a lot of corners and crosses and free kicks. And then they got that goal kind of in transition through Son from a set piece, somewhat ironically. And then I wondered, you know, is it going to be like one of those City wins Spurs have had many times over the last few years where they kind of weather an early storm, get a goal, and then they're in the game and it's really competitive and they're, you know, they're on level terms. But it wasn't like that. You know, they got the goal and then Arsenal went back to battering them. The two goals were a little bit, I guess you could say, undeserved in the kind of context of the way that the game was going at the time. But there was an inevitability about Arsenal scoring from a corner, I think, when you're under that much pressure. One's going to go in against them because they're that good at it. And then it was just kind of quite typical Spurs to concede another one in quick succession. Bissouma with a really poor mistake, giving the ball away, and a great finish from Trossard. And I felt the second half was a bit of a nothing, really. Arsenal probably should have added to their lead. Again, I didn't think Spurs looked much like equalising. So I can understand why Postecoglou was so frustrated. And as I said at the top, I think passive was a good word to describe that match.
Yeah, I mean, Spurs score with basically a mishit shot from Son that gets the deflection and goes in, and that was the sum total of their endeavours really going forward. And you mentioned the goals. I mean, yeah, Trossard hit it okay. We'll talk more about the goalkeeper. I think he should have got a stronger hand to that. Dragosin didn't get across quickly enough. And after I bigged up Bissouma the other day, and Dan, you rightly said, okay, he played pretty well against Tamworth for 90 minutes, but you weren't totally convinced by him. And yeah, he gave that ball away. So hugely frustrating. And afterwards, Tom A, Postecoglou says, well, that's unacceptable. But we've heard that before. I mean, we keep producing these toothless away performances in particular. How much longer can the manager keep saying this is unacceptable and not do anything about it?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I find Ange's post-match press conferences always quite problematic. I was surprised he kind of adopted this tone last night. I didn't come off the, come off the press box thinking that this was kind of a, you know, let's slam the players and say that everything is terrible and we didn't play according to our identity kind of match. I thought Spurs were okay. Like, I thought they played fine in patches. I thought Arsenal were just the better team. They dominated them in a way that I think we sort of expected they might do. I kind of agree. Yes, Spurs, I guess, were passive in that first 20 minutes, but Arsenal were pressing them all over the pitch. They were hounding them out in the corners. They weren't letting them escape. They weren't allowing them to establish any kind of fluidity or momentum, you know. And actually, I thought it was quite a sort of a, for about half an hour, I thought Spurs were actually quite good in that, in a way. Like they were defending well, they were compact, they were breaking at speed. They were really kind of, had Saar and Son flying through the middle when Arsenal overcommitted. It looked to me, I was even sort of thinking, this is actually quite a mature Tottenham performance, in line with the kind of Liverpool game last week, where it's slightly more like a normal game of football. And okay, you know, the second half, I think, was a disappointment. He brought on the two players, Maddison and Johnson at half-time. And it didn't really work, I didn't think. I didn't think Spurs were really much better in the second half. I thought Arsenal really kept them at arm's length. It didn't look to me like the kind of disastrous match where you lay into the players afterwards, I have to say. Like, they got beaten 2-1 away at Arsenal, you know, who are a title challenger. And we don't need to go over why Tottenham are in all sorts of mess in terms of injuries at the moment. I just thought it was the kind of game where Ange could have said afterwards, proud of the players, big effort, the end of a big week, didn't get the result we wanted, we move on, you know? And I just wonder if sometimes I think Ange flies into these post-match press conferences where his emotions are still running high. And in my opinion, and it sounds funny to say this as a journalist, he creates too many headlines in those moments. You know, he creates too many headlines by with big statements about, you know, whether it's set pieces, whether it's about winning a trophy in his second season, whether it, and this occasion was about, you know, we forgot who we are. This isn't our identity. It's unacceptable. I just think it's too much. I think he needs to go home, cool off and come back and say something slightly more measured, because I didn't really think it fit the narrative. I mean, did everyone else, was I watching a slightly different game? Did everyone else think that Spurs were completely unacceptable and that they were nowhere near the level that they should be? Like, it just didn't really feel to me like it was that kind of match.
Where I probably disagree with you is I don't think it was a kind of mature, canny performance in the first 20 minutes. I think they were defending robustly, but every time they tried to get the ball up the pitch to Son or Kulusevski or Solanke, Chimba or Gabriel or Saliba or Lewis Skelly, who was outstanding, just kind of stepped in, shrugged them off the ball and started another wave of attack. And it didn't feel like Spurs had much threat on the counter. I know there were those two chances before the Son goal where Spence crossed for Solanke and then Kulusevski forced a save from Raya. But I just felt that they were really pegged back in, and there was a kind of certain inevitability about the Arsenal goal coming from a corner, because the pressure was just building and building and building, and it was kind of wave after wave of red attack. So I think you make a really interesting point. It's one worth considering, but I do think it was more of a kind of backs to the wall display than that kind of...
But that is going to happen, like, Dan. Like, I tend to think, like, there's always this thing against Manchester City, for example, where everyone thinks, well, you know, do you play, you know, your own football against City, or do you kind of sit deep and try and hit them on the break? And Spurs spent, you know, 2 or 3 years doing the latter. And then Postecoglou came in and everyone sort of thought, you know, in the first match, are they going to play completely differently? And it was exactly the same. They didn't have the ball at all. City just had the ball. And that is because they're playing against a good team. Like, sometimes you can't actually do what you want to do because you're playing away from home against a really good side. And you have to accept that if you're playing at the Emirates against Arsenal, you're going to have to go through 20 or 30 minutes sometimes of pressure where you don't have much of the ball and you're not able to dominate the match and play slick, free-flowing football. And I think Ange has to almost accept that as well and say, okay, like, they came through that 20 minutes. Like, that was the first time I think I've seen Spurs in a long time actually endure, like, actually kind of resist kind of a period of really intense pressure and not concede. And okay, like, they reverted to type at the end of the half by conceding 2 goals in 4 minutes. And that has been the problem for Spurs all season. That they concede one and they concede another, you know, and that really just killed the game for them. But I didn't think it was anywhere near the kind of disaster performance that Ange made it out to be honest.
I think, Tom, you sort of hit upon something quite interesting there over why skeptics of Ange are skeptical that it'll ever work, in that his disappointment yesterday was that his team didn't play the football that he wants to see his side play in every game. Talked about being too passive, talked about, you know, not playing aggressively. He said, my team's aggressive with and without, with or without the ball. We've shown that recently against Liverpool. It's like he wants to do it in every match. And in this perfect world, that's fantastic to watch. But how realistic that is to be able to do that in every game, let alone, you know, away to a title challenger. Yes, it's North London derby, so there's even more sort of tension in the game from a Spurs fan's point of view and wanting their team to perform. But I don't know. I just don't know. I think the people who are sort of skeptical that it will work, that kind of sort of speaks to that. And his halftime changes, yes, Bissouma gave the ball away and wasn't having a good game. But Tottenham's midfield at times has been, I think, quite regularly a bit too easy to play through under Postecoglou. And for him to suddenly go to Bergvall, Kulusevski and Maddison in a midfield three, okay, they didn't actually concede a goal in the second half, but that is effectively three number 10s. All right, Bergvall can play in different positions. It just, they were kind of fortunate.
There was a moment, Tom, wasn't there, like literally after half time, I think it was within about 10 seconds, where like Kulusevski and Maddison had both committed to the press. Bergvall had also probably gone about 10 yards too high. And one pass, basically, in Sterling had the whole of the midfield, yeah, basically to himself. And it was like, oh, this is how it's going to be for the rest of the second half.
And how realistic it is for that kind of mentality in every single match, given the level of competition and depth in the Premier League. I just, personally, that's my biggest sort of quibble with Postecoglou's whole approach and philosophy, as entertaining, particularly as a neutral, as the games can be, as to why I'm not sure it will lead to success in the league. And that's before you even get onto the damning stats over the league form this year, which I'm sure we'll move on to soon.
But with that, Marcus, before you come back in, with that in mind, I actually thought the second half, in my mind, was the more disappointing part of the match, because Tottenham, I think Arsenal were sort of waiting for Spurs to come at them in that second half. They were kind of keeping the ball at the back and they were waiting for this sort of siege to happen, which never really came through. And Spurs had Maddison on the pitch, they had Kulusevski, they had this really like attacking lineup that you thought would put on a sort of 20, 30 minute exhibition of kind of football and chances, but it never really happened. Like I thought Arsenal looked really comfortable in that second half. The sort of pace and the tempo of the match completely dropped. If anything, I thought Ange would have been more disappointed with that period of the match where basically Spurs didn't impose themselves, you know.
I think you're right
that the two changes didn't really work.
I think you're absolutely right. They created so little, and that's what frustrated me. And okay, Arsenal didn't score again, but goodness me, they had plenty of opportunities. On another night, they could have had four or five. I know that one of the goals came from a corner that shouldn't have been, but we're clutching at straws in that regard. Jonathan Liu, he's a Spurs fan, isn't he? He's written another good article in his newspaper column saying that Spurs are naive. And he makes some interesting points. You know, there's not a lot of difference. Had Porro scored in the last minute, we'll be looking at everything very differently. There's so many questions, but the naivety is there to a degree. And Dan, I want to ask you about the goalkeeper, because he came in, as we know, kept clean sheets in his first two matches, the first Tottenham goalkeeper to manage that since 1924. Had a really interesting night last night. You know, looks very assured on the ball, but he's so laid back, very nearly paid the penalty, a la Fraser Forster, and didn't seem to learn from that. As I mentioned, perhaps at fault for the Trossard goal. What did you make of his overall contribution?
Yeah, again, in the press room, there was a bit of debate about Kinski, and a couple of our colleagues were saying they thought he had quite a sketchy game. I think, for me, he is kind of a net positive, but I think I said on the last pod, or we all said on the last pod, like there is going to be a clanger at some point, like a really bad clanger. He was arguably at fault for both goals, or could have done better for both goals last night. I think that's fair to say. Got blocked off for the corner, but he slightly misjudged the flight of the ball. And then obviously Trossard's winner kind of bounced in front of him and sort of went over or through his hand. And he put his head in his hands on the turf, didn't he, afterwards, as if to say, you know, I've made a mistake here. I know that could be costly. So it was a difficult night. And there was obviously two mistakes playing out, one in each half, you know, particularly the one where he was tackled by Havertz midway through the first half. But I still think it's a bit like you screaming at the clouds for playing out from the back, really. Like, I would just say to that, like, his way of playing is more of a net positive than a negative. Or not, you know, there will probably be mistakes, just as there are kind of mistakes from Manuel Neuer, and when we've seen mistakes from Edison and Alisson and others over the years, that they do happen. But he's playing that ultra, you know, aggressive modern goalkeeper style. He's high outside his box. He's very purposeful and kind of casual and relaxed on the ball. He will take risks. But I thought, you know, on the whole, although you could point to him for both goals, I think he was kind of encouragingly assertive, particularly in Arsenal's early aerial bombardment. I think he wasn't always catching, but he got a hand on most of the crosses and corners and free kicks that were kind of in his vicinity. And I thought he dealt with them with a bit more authority than Vicario probably would have done. That may be a bit harsh on Vic, but I thought Kinski was kind of making an effort to come and punch and push stuff away. So, yeah, look, I think he's going to be a really important player for Spurs. I really do. It wasn't the easiest Premier League debut, but he's been absolutely thrown in, hasn't he? Liverpool, then Tamworth's long throws, then Arsenal. And I think, you know, on the whole, this first kind of 2 weeks at the club has been pretty encouraging.
Yeah, I do like his demeanour. There were a lot of positives. You're right. He was forceful coming for those crosses. Showed that lovely touch, you know, flicking the ball with it, with his foot in the second half as well. But Rio Ferdinand, who I don't necessarily always agree with, was saying that if he'd been playing last night, he'd have been screaming at Kinski just to speed things up a little bit. It's a North London derby. And I thought it pointed again to the fact that there are no real leaders in the Spurs team, that nobody seemed to be saying that to him. And he did get away with it. And Tom B, the other point, well, one other point I want to make with regards to all this is, I think, you know, two of our best players overall this season, but who have played almost every match and now look jaded, are Porro and Dejan Kulusevski, which didn't help. And so there's another problem in terms of the Postecoglou way of doing things, because he wants to keep faith with his most important players, but they look absolutely exhausted. I thought Kulusevski's actually had two or three disappointing games now. And that naivety as well, when your goalkeeper is perhaps struggling a little bit, why do they keep passing it back to him? To me, lack of leadership and a worrying drop in form from two of our most important players as we head into a critical stage of the season.
Yeah, I agree with Kulusevski. He does look tired. He looks like he's not having the same kind of impact that he has had in the brilliant first half of the season for him personally, obviously not from Spurs' point of view, but he was definitely the biggest bright spark, and has been their talisman all season, definitely become their most important player. And that's probably why Ange keeps sticking with him. But he looks like he could do with a break. It leads to obvious and fair questions over James Maddison and what's going on there with Ange, and why is he not getting more game time at the moment, given that his midfield looks tired. I mean, the fact that he once again didn't start with Maddison in a big match. I'm not saying he's deserved to start based on his performances, just purely from the fact that he could, you know, his big hitters could have done with a rest. It felt like another opportunity where he's decided not to do that. So I wonder where, you know, his long-term future, what's going on with him. Porro, not quite to the same levels as Kulusevski this season. I think he's had a middling season at best, to be honest, and has been caught out on a number of occasions. Same thing happened last night. The only thing I would say about Kinski is, yes, there were a few hairy moments and he got away with a couple perhaps, but sort of conversely, I actually still felt when watching him that he did bring more of a confidence to the defence around him than we'd definitely previously seen with Forster. Like, they continue to try and to give it back to him in sort of difficult situations. And I suppose with the way that Postecoglou wants to play, that is a positive. I think I can see a confidence in the back four already with him in goal, even if, as I say, a few hairy moments and he was at fault for both goals. So I'm not going to completely agree with you on that one.
No, I think there's a lot to be excited about with regards to Kinski. And again, let's signal out Archie Gray, 18 years of age. They're all on television banging on about Miles Lewis-Skelly. That's his name, isn't it? Who's 18 as well. Yeah, he was good, but Archie Gray was great. Bergvall was really good again. There's still a lot to be excited about. But Tom A, Spurs now are 8 points above the relegation zone. They go to Everton at the weekend. Then they've got Leicester, ifs and buts and maybes. Certainly if they drop more points in the next two games, are they going to get involved in a relegation dogfight, as extraordinary as that sounds? Bearing in mind, the way things are going, they are heading towards their lowest ever points tally in a 20-team Premier League season.
No, I don't think they're going to get involved in the relegation battle. I know it's kind of fun to say it, and people will say it, just like they said about Manchester United a couple of weeks ago, you know, and it makes nice stories, and, you know, it's a fun thing to talk about for journalists and rival fans, but I don't see it at all. You know, I have to say, you know, Spurs are clearly at a very low ebb at the moment, after a little uptick with the Liverpool win and, you know, scraping through over Tamworth. I think there was a bit of better feeling, you know, going into this derby, which we talked about, I think, a few days ago. But, you know, I mean, I still think that ultimately Spurs with Ange, you know, in the cups, are better off than what they would be if they decided to change the manager now, you know, and go through an interim period of 2 or 3 months. I still think they're better off giving Ange the benefit of the doubt when it comes to allowing the key players to come back. You know, that Romero, Van de Ven now expected back, what, in the next kind of few weeks? End of January, aren't they, I think? That will make a big difference. You know, that will be transformative for the team. Even last night, the ability to bring on Johnson and Maddison at half-time just kind of was, and Richarlison as well in the second half, was just a kind of a little flicker, I think, of a reminder of what kind of a good Premier League team should be able to do, you know, and I understand all the kind of stats, and there are many, and you can pick any stat you like about how bad this season has been for Tottenham. And I think, you know, Ange realizes that, you know, his comments in the post-match press conference last night, basically saying no one at the club should accept the league position, is, you know, an honest reflection from him that it's not good enough. You know, he's essentially there bringing pressure on himself, you know. But what is the alternative? The alternative is to ditch the whole project mid-season with a group of players who are about to go into a second leg of a Carabao semi-final. I just don't think that's viable. You know, it's a difficult, really difficult period. Everyone can see the team is kind of on its knees in terms of options, but I think they just have to see this through and hope that the last month or two of the season, when they have a full squad, is better and they push up into the top half, possibly even into the kind of Conference League, Europa League contention. And they finish the season on a high, which then gives Ange a bit of momentum going into the summer. It's worth saying, if they get all their players back and nothing improves and they go out of all the cups with a whimper, that's a different thing, you know, and I think it has to be reviewed in the summer on its merits.
Unfortunately, based on their recent away form, you can't see them doing what they need to do at Anfield in the second leg of that League Cup. And then they go to Aston Villa. And obviously, if they lose both those matches, then there'll be a lot to talk about. Danny, I'll ask you the same question. Do you think Spurs could get caught up in a relegation battle? And secondly, it was great to see Richarlison come back last night, but Postecoglou's made it clear he wants another striker. We're already halfway through January. There seems to be no sign of anything imminent happening in that regard. Why not?
No, I don't think Spurs will be in a relegation battle. I agree with Tom. I think the first thing to say on that is that there will be three worse teams. The newly promoted clubs, for one, and obviously Wolves are still struggling a little bit despite the change in manager. I think it's worth saying that if you take the run since Man City, which is the run of one win in 9 matches, I think 5 points from a possible 27, so the win over Southampton and then draws with Fulham and Wolves, the clubs Spurs have lost to in that run are the current top five and Bournemouth away. So I know it's unacceptable, as Postecoglou said, and they should be doing better, but that the fixtures have been a little bit hard on Spurs. And I know they've obviously lost to Palace and Ipswich before that run started, but yeah, to reiterate, the current top five are, you know, almost all on great form, and Bournemouth, who are a very, very hard side to beat at the Vitality Stadium. So
the fixtures are getting better. You know, if I think the next five are, as you said, Everton, Leicester, Brentford, Man United, and Ipswich. So five teams who I think are in the bottom half of the table. I think Brentford might be 10th. So five teams who are 10th or below. So that is a chance to put together some momentum in the league. You know, whatever happens in the cups, there's a chance to go on a little run there. And you would really, really expect results to pick up in that run. Your second question, I think, was about the striker. I mean, I think people are obviously hammering the club already for not doing business midway through the month. Postecoglou's been very, very clear. He wants another forward. Tom B asked him about Solanke, comparisons with Kane in the last press conference. And the first thing he said was, yeah, he could be a great replacement for Kane if we get help from up front. So, he's obviously kind of using any question about the forwards to kind of put a bit of pressure, a bit of soft pressure on the club to bring in the forward that he so desperately wants. And I got to say, I think last night was very clear why he feels he needs another forward. Obviously, you can't rely on Richarlison. As sad as that is to say, in the second half of the season, he's just not reliable enough in terms of fitness. And I think Kulusevski, Son and Solanke all looked really tired. And they, as I said at the top, they were just jaded and overpowered and kind of outfought by Arsenal's really impressive back line and Declan Rice. I think it probably will happen, but I think whereas Kinski was someone they had lined up for the summer and their deal, they just kind of could accelerate at the start of this month with relative ease. I think getting a forward is going to be much harder, and they are probably looking, if you're an aggregator listening to this, please don't quote me on this, but I imagine they're looking at situations like Rashford or whoever and seeing what happens in the last 2 weeks of the window and seeing if there are deals for players in Europe or the Premier League that might be possible in the last kind of 10 days, because that's when real movement starts to happen in January. So, yeah, it must be frustrating for Postecoglou and supporters, but I can sort of understand why that hasn't been addressed yet. But I think based on what Postecoglou said, including saying that Lancashire will probably go on loan, I think there presumably is a bit of confidence that they will get a forward in. And but I think it's going to be a late one.
I don't think they're going to get sucked into a relegation battle, but they are showing relegation form. I don't think you can get away from that. Yes, Dan points out some of the fixtures they've had have been tough and the ones coming up are more favourable, but then we probably said that about Ipswich at home. Ipswich are at the moment on 16 points, which is just above the relegation zone on goal difference, and they've lost one fewer match than Tottenham. I mean, there's just no getting away from how bad these statistics look. I mean, literally only the bottom three have lost more games than Spurs have.
Tom, they also won four fewer games as well. Like, you can be selective. Yeah. Like, I mean, I know this losing statistic is really attractive for everyone to say, oh, look, they've lost 11 games. But that it's partly because Spurs don't really draw. So they've also won a lot of games. I mean, but, okay, not a lot. A lot is going on. But they've won twice as many games as everyone else in the bottom five, So
and that's
it works both ways, isn't it?
It does. It does. And this is more me backing up my argument of why I'm not convinced it's going Ange's approach, because it's too inconsistent, will lead to where he wants to take the club, rather than me making the case for why Spurs will stay up this season. I do expect that to happen. But I also do feel like sometimes maybe we get some criticism from listeners for being a bit too not looking at some of these stats a bit as much as they deserve, and they are damning. I do think we need to sort of spell them out a little bit. But having said that, as I've said in the last few weeks, really, I do still see players playing for the manager. If it would be different if that weren't the case, and we've seen many times over the years, I mean, literally with Conte towards the end, most recently, where, I don't know, downing tools, but players clearly don't have the same passion for it. But there have been matches recently as Liverpool, where it's felt like there is a will and a desire from the players to play for him, to play for the club, to do well. It's just whether you think his approach will work or not, and that's where I'm at, I suppose, on that front. But I guess on a one-off game, which is where it comes back to the cups and how much it hinges on those competitions, it can work. And I agree with Marcus. I think that week in February, provided, you know, he doesn't have a disaster between then and now, which is not beyond the realms of possibility. You know, it just Spurs luck at the moment. They catch Everton when they've got a new manager. So that's not going to be easy, obviously. But I think if he struggles in that week in the FA Cup and more specifically the Carabao Cup, then I would be worrying for him.
Yeah. We've got Everton, of course, as we mentioned at the weekend. And I know what you're saying. I think it's true that the players do seem still very much to be playing for the manager, but they're professionals. You know, you'd like to think at this stage of the season they still would be. But I'm also interested, you know, he hooks Bissouma and Sarr at half-time. How do they feel about that? We constantly mention that there seems to be something going on with Maddison. So I wonder how much longer that might be the case. And let's talk about Everton. Okay, they lost their first home game under David Moyes against Aston Villa on Wednesday night. But Dan, this is unfortunately got nil-nil written all over it. But just how important the game is this now, do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a very big game. And I think Postecoglou's comments last night have almost kind of added pressure to his position and his situation, because he has come out and said this should not be acceptable for anyone at the club. And we have to assume that, you know, he's not just talking about the players. I think that was in the context of a question about the two 18-year-olds. But having said that, we have to assume it's not just in the context of the players, but also, you know, in the context of Daniel Levy and the board. So there is now kind of mounting pressure on him to address the league form. I think, as the guys have said, while Spurs remain in the cups, their season very much remains alive, and you can still see it being not just a successful season, but a transformative and even historic season if they win one of the cups. You know, it would be huge for the club. But I think, as one of the Toms pointed out a while ago, it's pretty unusual for clubs in relegation form to be able to kind of switch form on for one-off cup games. You know, so there is an incentive to picking up in the league, even if I don't really agree with Tom A that there's anything left to play for in the league. I just can't see Spurs getting back in the top eight. They're 10 points behind Bournemouth already. So that needs a big swing to even get back in the contention for a Conference League place, which is what, usually seventh. It feels almost like a position kind of safely and respectably in mid-table at this point is almost the best they can hope for in the league. But there's still a tremendous amount to play for in the cups. But my feeling is, you know, in order for the cups to kind of come off, that you know, they need to generally lift confidence, lift form, get players back, and all the rest of it. And that starts at Everton on Sunday, and I think. And again, said last night in his press conference, you know, this has to change starting on Sunday.
Yeah, well, we keep hearing that. And we mustn't forget the Europa League. We've got Hoffenheim next week, who are hammered by Bayern Munich. Actually, Harry Kane scored yet again from the penalty spot in the 5-0 win. And of course, it's jumping ahead a long way. But if you do win the Europa League, you go straight into the Champions League. So yeah, let's forget about the league as long as we don't get dragged too close to the relegation zone. One other point, I haven't got any details, but I see that Enic have further increased their stakehold in the club, so all the fans will be cheering about that. Any other points of business that we need to address, Tom A in particular, before we head off for this thriller at Goodison Park?
I'd just like to dwell on a couple of positives I think we slightly skittled over, which was, I thought Bergvall was really good again last night. And I was sort of interested in his second half role, where he played as a sort of deep lying midfielder, and I sort of just did wonder, like, is this are Spurs going to stumble upon an interesting solution to a kind of more of a playmaking role for Bergvall? I know that there is a defensive element there which may need addressing, but he's so calm and good on the ball. He loves having the sort of the pitch in front of him to kind of direct play. I wonder if that might be a role that he could sort of move into, you know, in the second half of the season, perhaps. And I mean, I take the points about Bissouma coming off, but I mean, how frustrating is that? You know, when Ange was kind of talking about moments and the need to kind of see through those moments and not to give away errors, for him to give away that ball and then and then for Arsenal to score a second so soon after a first, I just think, how long do Spurs wait for Bissouma to deliver, to actually become the player that they think he might become, you know? And when do they actually say, we've had enough, you know, now we're going to trust someone else and give them a go? And maybe Bergvall, that he's just emerging now in this kind of crumpled heap of ashes that is this season. I feel like there are some little things. Spence playing really well, I thought, again last night, basically locking up Sterling. Gray, we've already mentioned. I think Kinski showed what he can be. There are sort of four or five little elements here that I think, if you look at it in a kind of glass half full lens, that if Spurs can get back, there's sort of four or five key players, defenders, and marry those players with this little crop of sort of youngsters who have, in Ange's words, kind of become men and become leaders, maybe to kind of stretch it, but to sort of have actually sort of become real fully fledged players in this team, then there could be a more encouraging period to come, I think, you know, and we shouldn't lurch away from a week ago when they had a really good win against Liverpool, you know, and we were thinking, look, this is what this team could possibly be. They got beat 2-1 by Arsenal. Arsenal are a really good team, you know, and I think it's possible that they can still finish this season on a better note. I really do. I don't know if everyone thinks that's just, you know, blind positivity, but I still think there are some things in this season that Spurs can get out of it.
Yeah, well Dan will in his world of optimism. Tom B?
Well, I definitely still think Spurs can win a competition this season, and that will be a massive season if they do that. There's no denying that. On Bergvall, I don't know about you, but it feels like he's beefed up a little bit. Do you not think, in the last few months? I don't know if he's been hitting the weights or something, but he suddenly looks even more sort of physically imposing. Yeah. And just watching him last night, there was one particular moment, I think in the second half, where his close control, dribbling at speed from a deep lying position, as Tom mentioned, was a joy to watch. He's just such a talented footballer and is really, really growing into the role and looks like a fabulous prospect, and that those are reasons to be cheerful going forward. But I just wanted to pick up on your Bissouma comment. No doubt it's an individual error, which is very frustrating, and Bissouma's had such a stop-start camp, you know, time at Tottenham, particularly last season, and is prone to these errors. But I do wonder how much in isolation you can blame him, but when you have these moments that crop up time and again in key moments of games where just playing a bit more cautiously, perhaps just for a few minutes, whether it be, you know, ahead of half time in the 6-3 at Liverpool or whatever it be. I mean, how much can you put that on the manager? Because players generally wouldn't take certain decisions unless they were given license to, or they'd be out of the team straight away. Although, having said that, Bissouma was hooked at half time, so maybe that's my answer. I don't know. I'm more putting it out there. How much is this on Ange, these moments, rather than him just using that as reason?
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. I remember last season, a discussion, you know, he kind of said, I'm paraphrasing really, you know, I don't mind players making mistakes, you know, as long as we're trying to do it the right way. Absolutely. Actually, talking of stupid things as well, last night, Sarr kicking the ball away to get a yellow card. I mean, it's things like that where I go back to what Jonathan Lew said. I mean, it's a young team in many ways, but it's a naive team. It's frustrating. Let's give the last word to our man of optimism, Danny. Give us something to smile about on this miserable, bleak January afternoon.
No, I think the two Toms have said it. You know, I do still think there is, yeah, a lot of upside to the season. As I said, it could genuinely be transformative and historic if Spurs can win a cup. And they're two games from doing that in one competition. And, you know, if they get past Villa, you know, who knows? You know, they might get a decent draw in the FA Cup. And then that starts opening up for them. I think that, as Postecoglou's repeatedly said, Spurs should come out of this grim injury crisis in a much better position, with guys like Gray, Bergvall and Jed Spence kind of established first-team players and all playing very well, you know, arguably three of the form players in the squad at the moment. And, you know, hopefully in the next, say, 10 days, Romero, Ben Davis and Van der Ven will all be fit, and the squad will start to take on a very different shape. So, you know, there is reasons to keep looking ahead, although we've been saying that, I think, for most of the winter, almost the whole winter, really, since early November. We've kind of been looking for players to get back, and it hasn't quite worked out that way. But yeah, I think that is really kind of what is keeping everyone going at the moment.
Sorry, just to deny Mr. Positivity the last word, we haven't really touched too much on Hoffenheim. And I just wanted to say, looking at their form, I mean, they've scored now 3 goals in their last 9 games. They've won 5 games all season, got smashed by Bayern Munich last week. I mean, Spurs need, I think, 4 points, is it, from their final 2 games to sort of guarantee going through in the automatic spots. So I don't know, it depends on your how glass half full, glass half empty kind of Spurs fan. Is it classic sort of Tottenham come along and face a team like that and suddenly have issues? Or I think with Postecoglou's style of play, which I've already mentioned here that I am sceptical about certain aspects, I do think that actually might be a good game for them to come into this on Thursday. And that's something to be positive about.
I don't know if the Dr. Tottenham sort of extends cross borders. I don't know if it's really got to that point yet. I don't know. It would be a new level, I feel, of like...
What's German for doctor? I'm not sure, yeah.
Listen, we nearly lost to Tamworth on Sunday. I mean, Hoffenheim presumably are a stronger outfit than them. So anything is possible. Guys, thank you as always. That was Tom Barkley of The Sun, being nearly as optimistic as Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard. And of course, well, yeah, he was Mr. Pessimism for much of last season, was old Allnut, but he sort of, he oscillates, he blows in the wind a little. let us hope it's not too sticky at the Toffees on Sunday. I'm Marcus Buckland. Come on, you Spurs.